This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
That's right. It is the Gas House Gang, and we are with you until 1 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX. We do this every weekday from 12 until 1. Chris Ranji here with you, and we will have Bernie Miklas joining the show in just a moment. We're also going to talk a little, going to talk a lot of Cardinals baseball today, but we're also going to talk about the Reds, because the Reds are in town starting tomorrow as the Redbirds enjoy an off day today. And then we'll dive into the Cincinnati Reds just a little bit. And we know that that has been a pretty good baseball team, Bernie Miklas. And I don't think they've played better than anybody expected. We knew they were up and coming. As it stands right now, the Cardinals are in front of them in the standings, but the Reds have been, you know, it's not the kind of team that like the Cardinals used to be able to walk over. You can't really do that with them any longer.
Yeah. And, you know, they made the playoffs last year. Good to be with you, Ranj, by the way. The only thing about the Reds, and we'll talk to Mark Shelton about this, the Reds bullpen is awful, just flat out awful. And, you know, they've got really good young starting pitching. In fact, one of their best pitching young pitchers is going to return from the IL on Sunday to start against the Cardinals, Rhett Lauder. I think their lineup is good. Ellie De La Cruz is on the IL. The Cardinals won't have to worry about him. I think their offense is a little inconsistent. Same is true of the Cardinals' offense. Same is true of a lot of offenses in the division. But I just don't see, like, as things stand now, I mean, and obviously it's subject to change. I don't see how the Reds can have any kind of any type of consistency in winning with the bullpen that just gets blown up way too often.
Yeah, we've seen that with the Cardinals. When the bullpen's not working, then things sort of fall apart, can't hold on to any leads. And that has been an issue for them. I think it's stabilized quite a bit, though, in the last month. And, you know, you're talking about the injured list, and the Cardinals have had their share of it. They've been pretty lucky when it comes to the pitching staff, and that goes back to last year. But for a guy like Lars Nootbaar, who has not played at all this season, he is going to be back tomorrow. We expect him to be in the lineup. And what are the implications of this? Because, you know, we had this conversation on Tuesday when we had Oliver Marmol on, and then, you know, you and I and Tom Ackerman spoke about it after the fact, and what to do with Victor Scott, and what to do when Nathan Church comes back as well from his injury, and you've got Nootbaar coming back from his. There are some decisions to be made here.
Yeah, you know, the Cardinals are actually going to have a surplus of outfielders, which I don't know. I think that's a good problem to have, so to speak.
That's just like old times. Surplus of outfielders, you know?
I Nootbaar is going to be in left. Walker's going to be in right. I think that's obvious. Center field, I think they want to give Nathan Church a run when he comes back. He's about to start an injury rehab. And that should be pretty brief. And I know they like him, so I think he'll displace Victor Scott as the starter. But then you have all these other guys. Like, you know, what's going to become of Brian Torres? What's going to become of Nelson Velasquez? What's going to be the role of Jose Fermin? What's going to be the role of Thomas Sagesi? You know, then you have a guy knocking loudly on the door in Joshua Baez. And while I don't think they're going to bring him up anytime soon, he will be up at some point. So he is being groomed to play center field. And so when he comes up, whether it's after the All-Star break or whatever, you know, the order of the chairs will be rearranged again, because they're not going to bring up Baez to sit on the bench. He'll be their starting center fielder.
Yeah, there's definitely no reason to do that to him if they bring him up. And I know right. We had this conversation again. We talked about Victor Scott, and I am, and Tom and I discussed this yesterday as well. For me, it is an issue of, for this season alone, I'm not that worried about whether or not he performs. Because I agree with you on this. I have very little confidence that he's going to ultimately turn into a good offensive player, or maybe even a serviceable one. He may not do that either. It may just be that he doesn't belong here starting every day. That might just very well be the case. He may not have the skill set for it. But I'm okay with him playing until they feel like they've got younger guys who are absolutely ready to be here, and they won't do any detrimental harm to them by bringing them up too early. And, you know, I'm all about being cautious, at least for this year. I think it's perfectly fine to do that because they're not up against it. You know, they're not up against having to win or desperate to win this year, or this is supposed to be the year they win the division. So you got to go all out for it. I'm all right with patience, but I'm also going to talk out of the other side of my mouth and say you can't necessarily go on with this too long if he looks completely lost up there and is giving them nothing.
Listen, I like Victor Scott a lot. I've been rooting for him, hoping that he would turn the corner, but he has not only failed to turn the corner, and offensively he has gotten worse. Now, some people would say, well, so is Nolan Gorman, so he's still here. Okay, fine. Yeah, good point. But I think Nathan Church is someone that Heim Bloom and Ali Marmol like a lot, and I think they have a center field lined up that they would love to play more. Because I think Victor Scott, it isn't just the offense. Everybody puts the emphasis on the offense. I did a deep dive on this the other day, and Victor Scott, his defensive value, according to StatCast, has dropped dramatically this year. It's not anywhere close to where it was last year. His base running value has dropped considerably. So basically, in terms of his value, based on his total value, which is offense, defense, base running, Victor Scott has lost 44% of his value that he gave the Cardinals last year, 44%. And I'm not trying to be cruel here, but even last year, we're not talking about a guy who was a star player. So I'm not sure where he goes or how this gets better, because you know, his stolen base, 11 for 19. He's already been thrown out twice as many times as he was all of last year when he was a really good base stealer. If you look at his outs above average and his range rating and defensive run save, that's way down. I mean, two star catches, which means moderately difficult. Last year, he was around 70%, 72%. This year, maybe a little higher than that. This year, it's 59%. He's not getting to balls that he used to just eat up last year. Again, man, I'm not trying to pile on and be a jerk. I'm not. But part of this whole thing for the Cardinals this year is evaluating young players and also giving them a chance to prove that they deserve to stay or prove that they warrant and merit playing time. By any objective measure, Victor Scott's not doing that. That's my position anyway. But I'm not saying run him out of town, but they're going to have better choices soon, including some big guy in Memphis right now who is just putting up crazy numbers. Oh, and by the way, significantly reducing his strikeout rate, that guy named Baez.
And you can watch this show on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. And Steelman83 is watching on Twitter. And he says the bad thing is if you don't give Baez and Blaze opportunities now, they won't play until 2028-29 at the earliest with the lockout.
Interesting.
And so, you know, that's a thing that I guess we have to consider, too. Do we get them some time under their belts here? Just because they have the luxury of doing that and then telling them, hey, you are not competing in a, you're not playing in a season that we expect to win the division or expect to go to the playoffs. So just grow at your own pace. Maybe it would be more valuable to have them up here doing that now.
Yeah, and especially Baez. And again, I'm not saying bring him up now, but I think at some point, if he continues to trend the way he is, especially with the reduction in strikeout rate, it makes all the sense in the world to bring him up because you'd like to get him that experience. And the thing of it is, he's already on the 40-man roster. So one thought would be, and listen, Blaise Jordan is not on the 40-man roster. So the difference is, if there is a labor impasse that leads to a late start of the 2027 regular season where, you know, there's a bunch of games missed or whatever, Blaise Jordan, as a guy who's not on the 40-man, he can go play minor league baseball. The minor leagues will continue. But anybody who's on the 40-man roster won't be able to go down to the minors and play if there is a work stoppage, right? So that would mean to me, you know, unless they want to put Blaise Jordan on the 40-man roster sometime soon, you know, they sort of have that card they can hold out and not box themselves in that way. But with Baez, I mean, the point is well taken. He's already on the 40-man. There's nowhere for him to play next season if it starts out with the sports shut down. So you might as well get him some reps this year. I mean, that's another reason why this year is really valuable in other ways that aren't necessarily winning first, but setting up your roster for the future.
I have heard this, that, and I think it's probably a long shot for it to happen, but the possibility that they could continue on this CBA for one more season and they could kick that can down the road on doing a new one for after 2027, so that when all these expiring TV contracts are up, that they can tie it all in together. So I don't know how likely that is to happen, but it's possible. Possible we have a 2027, and then maybe we do this whole thing again in a year, as opposed to doing it this upcoming offseason. Would that change the calculus much, do you think? At least for how the Cardinals approach the roster this year?
I think when would they know that there's an officially a decision both sides are going to say, okay, no, we're going to put this off for a year and we're going to go forward in 2027.
It won't be this season. It won't be during the season. Yeah. Definitely.
So, So I don't know that it would affect the timetable, because there's no way to know for sure if they'll do that or when they'll do that. I like the fact that it would be something to consider, but I tell you what, man, I am trying really hard not to burn out early on this stuff, because it's enough to just drive me crazy. Just already, you know, the exchanging proposals, mm-hmm. and, you know, Bruce Meyer greatly offended and all that. I mean, just like, you know, and the media around the country in general just overreacting to everything. It's like it's their first exchange of proposals. What you expected them to shake hands and say, oh, perfect, let's sing Kumbaya now. Like the first, like why was everyone going into DEFCON 4 because they both basically spit on each other's proposals, the first proposal. Everyone's going, oh my gosh. We got a long way to go on this stuff, my friends. You got to pace yourselves, man. Keep that blood pressure down. Don't do it to yourself.
I think it's because people cannot handle it, because the sport is in such a good spot right now. It is really popular. All of the decisions they have made have added to it. The ABS challenge, the pitch clock, pretty much everything but the, you know, the automatic runner at second. I don't hate that. That doesn't really bother me all that much. I know other people are bothered by it, but I think it's fine. But for the most part, anything that baseball has done with what they called improvements has actually worked that way. And people are paying attention. They're watching the sport. I think there's a fear that they're going to blow this momentum, that they've got some really great momentum, and they're going to let it get away and they're going to be really stupid about it. And I don't think anybody has any patience for it.
No. And I'm not at this point, I have no reason to take sides. Right. I try not to take sides anyway, but I will say this, the one thing that did surprise me when Major League Baseball presented their first proposal to the players is that Major League owners agreed to share all of their local media revenue. That's a huge, huge deal, man. That means the Dodgers and the Mets, the Yankees, and you know the Red Sox. And I'm trying to think of who has the most lucrative local media contracts, right? But the teams I mentioned, we're talking about massive, massive, massive sums of revenue. And the feeling was like, well, those guys will never agree to that. Why should they give up their revenue just because the guy in Pittsburgh doesn't know what he's doing or whatever? But no, I mean, Rob Manfred went in with their first proposal. So, well, our 30 guys have agreed to share all their local revenue. That was a wow moment for me. That was a really big step. I'm not saying this makes the owners saints, right? I'm not saying that at all, but that was a big step. And so I was kind of discouraged because the first thing, you know, coming from Bruce Meyer, who basically without a contract works for Scott Boras, is like just almost laughing at it. Like, you know, our players will lose collectively $20 billion on it. You know, just no, dude, you can reject the offer. Please, you can reject it. But you're not going to acknowledge the fact that all the big clubs have agreed to equally share their local TV revenue. That's a big step, if you ask me, because it's more money into the revenue pool for the players.
Justin, anyway. Yeah, Justin is watching us on YouTube and is asking about Lars Nootbaar and the possibility of him being traded. That is something we wanted to get into anyway here on the Gas House Gang, and we will do that when we come back.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
It is the Gas House Gang, and we're going to be talking some Reds baseball, some National League Central baseball with Mark Sheldon of MLB.com. That is at 12:30, and the reason we're going to do that is the Cardinals play the Reds starting tomorrow at Busch Stadium. So another series here at home. It's Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, you can watch the show and leave your comments there. And as I mentioned, there were some people who were texting in and also messaging in about Lars Nootbaar. And that was a thing we wanted to get to as well, because he is coming back to the lineup tomorrow. But as we are sitting here at the beginning of June, we're also getting into trade deadline season. So there is a distinct possibility the Cardinals make some moves and might actually subtract from the roster. And there's some speculation out there that Noot could be one of those, like the real third man who says the Dodgers need Noot. I guess just like they needed Tommy Edman. I mean, what do you think, Bernie? How likely is it that the Cardinals end up trading him if he proves himself to be healthy over the next few weeks?
I would say very likely, because he's only under contract for one more season. And it isn't that the Cardinals don't like him personally or professionally. Listen, last year was a season that I sort of move aside, because we had no idea watching it in real time how hurt he was. And he was playing hurt on two bad heels that needed surgery. And he had a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain. It really limited his mobility. But yet he played in a career high number of games in a season. So he gutted it out. But I throw the numbers aside. When he was a Cardinal from 2022 through 2024, three seasons, he was about 17% above the league average offensively. He had a .350 on base percentage. His slugging percentage was like .425. He had a really high walk rate. He had a really low strikeout rate. He could play defense at all three positions. He ran pretty well. And he had, from 2022 through 2024, man, he had incredible StatCast stuff that had all these front offices swooning, you know, because one thing about Noot is he's had some bad luck in the majors, because the quality of his contract has been tremendous, but yet his actual numbers don't like rise up to that level. So, but everything he does in terms of his approach at the plate is really, really good. And front offices, it seems like they're always just about all of them are looking for left-handed bats. So if he comes back, he's got a good reputation in the game. If he comes back and he shows that he's healthy, that he can move well, that he hits well, I think there'll be a great market for him, before the August 3rd deadline. And I think the Cardinals would be silly not to trade him.
Yeah, and Bernie, we have a listener who says, this is from the E-line, who says they shouldn't do it unless they're blown away by a return. I don't think they have to be blown away. Honestly, I think if you can get any kind of piece that helps you for the future, then you go ahead and do it. It does not have to be an overwhelming offer. For the reasons that you said, he's still pretty young. He is got a contract that is expiring here, and the Cardinals are still looking to add assets.
Right. And see, I never know what Chaim Bloom is looking for exactly, what it would take. He's not going to give, the answer to the question, he's not going to give Lars Nootbaar away.
Right.
Because there would always be a chance of trading him next year if they play baseball. But I just think that people are going to line up and make good offers for him. I don't know how to define good offers, but I just think it'll happen. And they have to strike when it's there. But I don't think any of us are saying, yeah, well, just get a little something. Just get like that, you didn't get much for Arenado, so just take anything you can get. No one's saying that, but we also got to be realistic. They're not, this isn't like they'd be trading Mike Trout. Okay,
that's exactly right. Let's come back and talk a little National League Central baseball. The Reds are coming into town tomorrow. Mark Sheldon from MLB.com will join us when we come back.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Cardinals have an off day today, but they are right back at it at Busch Stadium tomorrow. 7:15 for the first pitch when the Cincinnati Reds come to town. It is the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, and it is time to go to the Quiver River Electric guest line today, because covering the Reds and covering baseball for MLB.com is Mark Sheldon, who is now with us on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Good afternoon, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris and Bernie. How are you guys doing?
Hey, good. Hey, Mark, before Chris asks you a question, I got to ask you, man, because all those years being in press boxes, which I really not in press boxes all that much anymore, but all those years going to Cincinnati and seeing you, how many years have you been on the beat there? It's been, you're an old timer now. Not really, but it seems like it.
This is my 21st year in Cincinnati and my 26th overall.
Wow. Congrats.
Because
that's tough
much.
To do.
Yeah. It is.
Tough to do.
Especially
it is.
Now.
I've been Mark very lucky. I got my 25th anniversary for my 25th year recently, like my actual year. Jennifer Langosh from my St. Louis is now my boss.
Sure.
She came to town, and Marty Brenneman and her and a couple other people presented me with my my gold pass and my 25th year of service, and it was a very nice surprise.
Well, congratulations on that. It's very cool, and as Bernie said, especially in this media environment, it's really difficult to stick around for that long.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Mark, let's talk about the Reds and the division, because we have Bernie and I and Tom on this show, we have spent so much time talking about the division itself and how good it's been this year. And every team is over 500. And that includes the last place Reds, who are 31-30. So just taking a 30,000 foot view of the Reds season, this is a team that's recently been a playoff team. Why are things are the way they are right now in Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's been a rough one. I mean, it's amazing what all the Reds went through in May. They were 10-17 in May. They went from first to the bottom. Although at the same time, they're only a game and a half behind the Cardinals for second place. And it's just been, for them, it's just been going the wrong way, mostly because of their bullpen. Injuries played a part in that, but they've lost in just a month. They lost their closer, Emilio Pagan. They lost a starter in Rhett Lauder. They lost Ellie De La Cruz, their best player. And it just feels like they're piecing it together. They only have, because of either struggles or the injuries, they only have three of their eight relievers left from the opening day roster. And it's just been a rough run for them. They're hanging in there. It could be worse, but they need to find some correction, and they need to find it pretty quick.
Yeah, Mark, to your point, man, I look at the Reds since Pagan got hurt on May the 5th, and he was really good, and he's also a team leader. He's an important guy. Reds have a 6.05 bullpen ERA. They've only got four saves, and I look at that, and that's awful. But then I also look at it and say, well, how the heck are they a game over 500? I mean, it's almost like they're actually doing a pretty good job of surviving what is a terrible situation, right? Is that accurate?
Part of it is because they got off to such a hot start. They did have, believe it or not, by the end of April, I think they had this tied for the second best record in baseball. So they banked a lot of wins in April, which actually in itself was amazing because they were the lowest scoring. They had the lowest scoring run scoring for the whole league, and they had one of the lower batting averages. They were not getting any offense, but their bullpen was amazing, and their rotation was holding its own. So they kind of banked some wins early, and it's kind of helped them get through this. And they have won some games that they've either stolen a game like they did the other night against Kansas City, where they only got four hits, but they were three home runs and a walk-off single, and they do seem to find a way, but it just seems like whenever they kind of get a little bit of traction, something else will happen to them, and that's been the problem. And they're a team right now that's sort of just trying to figure it out, and Terry Francona has been trying to piece together something in the bullpen. And like you mentioned, it's a 6 ERA for the last month plus, and it's finding a dependable guy in late inning situations. Not only do they not have Pagan, they don't have Graham Ashcraft or Pierce Johnson either. So their late innings are really a compromise. And Tony Santion is just a mess right now. He's got like a 13 ERA in the last 12 appearances, and he got beat up again last night. So it's something they're going to have to figure out.
I have long been a fan of Francona, who you mentioned here, and being the manager of the team. How instrumental is he in keeping them afloat right now when all of this other stuff is going wrong?
Well, he's a guy that doesn't really put too much emphasis on looking ahead or even looking back. Like one of the reasons why they did so well last season, they had a really rough September, and they got swept in Sacramento by the A's, and things were looking a little peaked. And he had a very well-timed team meeting. And what the basic thing they did then and what they're doing right now is he really does, and I know it's cliche, but he really does focus on one game at a time. He does not ever try to make anything bigger than it is. He does not look at series and make them bigger than it is. Whether they're facing the Cardinals, a division rival, or they're facing someone outside the division, he treats all the games the same. And I think that is important for the players to do likewise. And they seem to do a really good job of that. They don't get too bogged down. And do they like losing? Absolutely not. They hate losing, and Francona hates losing, but they never make it more than what it is. And it's one loss or it's one win, and then they go to the next one. And that's when you don't make things too big and you don't make things too daunting, it can help you piece together some tough through the tough times.
Mark Sheldon with us from MLB.com has covered the Reds for more than 20 years. He's really one of the greats in the business, and have great respect for him. I wanted to ask you this. From the St. Louis view, I look at the Reds as a team that's beat up, but I also look at the Reds as a team as watch out, the best is yet to come. Because Hunter Green's going to be back relatively soon. Rhett Lauder, I think, is going to be back this weekend, if that's correct. Yep. Some of these relievers will cycle back in. I don't know if Brandon Williamson's going to be back anytime soon. But they've got some firepower that's going to be returning. So if you were to look at a long-range forecast for 2026, what's the Red ceiling, in your opinion?
Well, they still can be a playoff team. And right now with the expanded playoffs, they're in it. But it's going to be really tough. That I will say that they have to do better in the division. I think they are like 2-10 in the division. They got the one win against the Cardinals, and they got a win against the Pirates, and that's it. They haven't even played the Brewers yet, who have had their number for the last 5 years. So, and the schedule they have in September is brutal. But what they can do is if they can get on a run again and start banking some more wins, they might be able to weather the tougher parts of the schedule, but they definitely will be getting some guys back. Ellie De La Cruz could be back in about 2 to 3 weeks. Pagan could be back by early July. Hunter Green is in the bullpen and doing bullpen sessions, and his throwing program is making progress. They think he'll be back sometime in July. So there are guys coming back. Rhett Lauder's pitching Sunday versus St. Louis. So they have some guys coming back, but they need to start working maybe before the trade deadline and trying to get some relievers in. They may have to leverage some of their prospect capital and do what they have to do to get help. And if they can do that and maybe get some of their healthy, you know, their injured guys back healthy, they have a shot at staying in this. They just can't let it get too far away. The Brewers are pulling away, and you don't want to let your other division rivals pull away and then have to rely on the wild card where it's a lot more wide open.
Just knowing Terry Francona and the point he is in his career, he does not take a job like this unless he's got some sort of guarantees that if the Reds are in striking distance, they're going to be aggressive in trying to help the roster out. Is that the feeling that if Cincinnati is, you know, in a wild card spot, close to a wild card spot, and we're getting up on the deadline here, that they'll be active?
I talked to the president of baseball operations, Nick Crawley, just about that. I had a story go on Monday or Tuesday, and pretty much they're waiting to see where they are because it's so hard to say because only four teams in the National League have losing records. And what I basically got was, if they're in it, I think they would add. They did it last year. They added three players at the deadline last year. In all the spots, they added a starter, they added a bullpen piece, and they added a hitter. And that's part of the reason why they were able to get over the hump and get in the wild card. Now, if they're in the same position and they feel like they have a chance to go for it, I think they would make those moves. Because, yes, like you said, Terry Francona is not here to be in a rebuild. He's not there to just muddle along as a sub-500 team and a manager. I think that they want to take advantage of while they have him to perform. And certainly you don't want to pitter away the windows of Ellie De La Cruz or Hunter Green or anyone else that you have while you have them. So I think it would behoove them to make some moves if they're in position to.
Mark Sheldon with us. I want to ask lean on your perspective when we're talking about the NL Central. Just give us your quick view of the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs in terms of, where are they in your eyes and what's the upside of each one of those three teams?
Truthfully, I don't know how the Cardinals have been done so well. I haven't watched all their games, obviously, but what amazes me is that this was supposed to be a rebuild year and a step back. And the fact that the Cardinals are involved and playing well is a credit to them, especially their lineup. They have a lot of good hitters in that lineup, and there's not a lot of safe spots for pitchers. The Pirates, they're kind of dealing with some stuff, but I feel like they're getting their own way a little bit, but they're obviously having a better year. So they've improved a little bit with their pitching staff and with their lineup. They've added a few guys. They've given the Reds a hard time, so it's definitely a team that's improved. And the Cubs have been banged up with injuries too. When the Reds were in Chicago, and were in the middle of an 8-game losing streak, the Cubs were at a big 10-game winning streak, and they walked them off all three of the four games that they were in Chicago. And I thought the Cubs were wow, here they go. The Cubs are going to take off. And then the Cubs came back to earth. One thing about this division that seems to be true is every team seems to have its moment where they go on a nice little run, and every team goes on a stretch of a longer losing streak where they're like, is this ever going to end? The Brewers are not in that. They've had the winning streak. They haven't had the losing streak yet. So you kind of wonder if the Brewers might be due to come back to earth a little bit.
You posted a story today about Sal Stewart, who a lot of people believe is the front runner for the Rookie of the Year this year. And the story is about whether or not they're going to extend him, try to, get out in front of all those years of control and lock him down. What is the likelihood they do that? And do you think he'll end up winning the Rookie of the Year?
Well, he's got some competition for Rookie of the Year, including somebody there in St. Louis. And, there's a few other guys there with Weatherholt and Stewart, and perhaps when Connor Griffin gets off the injured list, he has a chance. But so I think Stewart has a very good chance because he seems to minimize his slumps. He can hit. He hits to all fields. He really knows his strike zone. He takes some walks. He's a very smart player, a very smart hitter. As for the contract, it's hard to say. I think his agent is Dan Lozano, who does have a history of unlike maybe Scott Boras, who never lets any of his players sign early before they get to free agency and hit the open market. Lozano with Joey Votto, he had him and he got him to a first a 3-year, like $38 million contract. And then as it got a little closer to free agency, signed the huge 10 million or 10-year, $250 million contract. So yes, it's possible to maybe do a deal with Stewart, like they can't do with Ellie De La Cruz, who's represented by Scott Boras. So I think it's definitely possible. When you hear both sides saying they're open to it, that's always a good place to start. It hasn't happened yet, obviously, but if Stewart's open to it and his agent's open to it and the club is open to it, I could see it getting done. Whether it gets done this year, I couldn't say, but I wouldn't be shocked if it happens next offseason.
Mark Sheldon, appreciate it. Thank you for talking baseball with us today.
Yeah. Hey, it was my pleasure, and take care, and I'll see you guys next time.
All right.
Mark Sheldon from MLB.com. Again, the Reds will be in town tomorrow. Series starts at Busch Stadium against the Cardinals. We have the broadcast. The first pitch will be at 7:15 with a 6:20 pregame show right here on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan. And by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Just a couple more minutes to go with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, Gas House Gang on KMOX on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Find KMOX Sports. Follow at KMOX Sports on Twitter. And you can watch this show and send us all kinds of messages. We love to hear from you, and we love to talk Cardinals during this this part of the day. And with the off day today, it's perfect time to do it. And I think a lot of people are interested in the trade deadline here, which still is several weeks away. But there's a lot of interest in what the Cardinals might end up doing. We talked about Lars Nootbaar, who is the most likely trade candidate for them if he's to go away. What do you think the rest of this division does? Or is maybe not all of it. We talked about the Reds a little bit. The Cubs, I would think, are going to be pretty aggressive. The Reds, I'm not exactly sure yet. But the Pirates, are they going to do anything at all?
Listen, they spent more money than they normally do in the offseason. So that was a bellwether of a more aggressive approach where the owner is going to give the president of baseball operations more leeway in improving the club? I don't trust that situation, but I do think that they'll do some I do think they'll try to make a move or two that'll at least upgrade them to some extent. I don't have a read, frankly, on what the Reds might do with the trade deadline, because I'm not sure like who's a pending free agent and all that. I think Milwaukee will do the Milwaukee thing. They'll make a move and everyone will kind of scratch their head. What do they want that guy for? And then 2 weeks later, they understand why the Brewers wanted him.
Or they'll trade somebody away and still be good.
Yeah, exactly.
they'll have no drop off whatsoever.
But the Cardinals are actually in a good position because Dustin May is going to be a popular target. Lars Nootbaar, Romero, maybe Riley O'Brien. They've got four guys at least that I think will have a market.
And I think people need to be prepared for the possibility they're over 500 and close to a playoff spot and still trade somebody away. I think that could happen. And you know what? Long term, do it. I am here for the long play, and I think it's what the Cardinals should do, Bernie. Bernie, great talking baseball with you. I know you're back on Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow at 5, so we'll be listening into that. And then you and I and Tom will be back at it with Oliver Marmol on Tuesday.
Looking forward to it, Ronj. Always enjoy doing this with you every Thursday. Thank you.
You too, my friend. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Chris Ranji. If you missed anything on the Gas House Gang, go back and get it on the Odyssey app or KMOX.com or wherever you get your podcast. Back tomorrow at 12 on 104.1 FM KMOX.